This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It was right then that I started thinking about Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence and the part about our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I remember thinking, how did he know to put the pursuit part in there? That maybe happiness is something that we can only pursue. And maybe we can actually never have it, no matter what. How did he know that?
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasodhi. Today, for the first time, the world will celebrate International Day of Happiness. Proclaimed by the UN General Assembly last June, it serves as an opportunity to mark the pursuit of global happiness and to consider the factors involved in achieving such happiness. Dr. Brandon Gomez, he is a consultant psychologist. He's with me and we're going to explore what you need to be truly happy. Welcome, Dr. Brandon.
Thank you.
You know, what made all the 193 countries around the world who decided in June last year that, you know, there should be emphasis on International Day of Happiness?
I just want to say, first and foremost, can you imagine this is the first ever International Day of Happiness. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you so much because I feel honored to be speaking on BFM today.
Okay.
The initiative to declare March 20th as a day of happiness comes from Bhutan, a country whose citizens are considered to be some of the happiest people in the world.
Exactly. And this is based on an index, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a day that encourages people all over the globe to reflect on what really matters.
Mm-hmm. So,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if I could ask you a question, if I could ask the listeners out there a question.
Sure.
What are your hopes for your children as a parent? What are your hopes for yourself in life, in living this life?
What are my hopes for my children?
Yeah.
It scares me, actually, the sort of world that they're going to be living in. But I always say, as long as you're happy, everything else will fall into place. But of course, it's finding that route to happiness, isn't it? Do most of us even know what happiness really is?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Do we? I mean, based on your practice, do you see many people who understand what it is?
I think a lot of people define happiness differently. You know, some of us say that happiness is all about smiling. Some of us say that happiness is about, there was somebody who wrote on my Facebook, happiness is going to the pubs every day.
Well, if it makes you happy.
But is it true happiness? You know, that's the question. I think that's what we're going to be discussing today.
Very interesting. Why has happiness suddenly become so important, Dr. Brandon? I mean, that we have to actually declare a day for it. I mean, I find that quite hard to understand.
I think...
Are we deprived of it that much?
I mean, look around you. I mean, you find that there's a whole vast of people that supposedly are, you know, look happy. I mean, you know, especially on Facebook, everybody's posting all their happy stuff. But you know, in real life, look around you, in your workplace, in your schools, in politics, in the country, in what's on the news right now. You know, if you really analyze the content of news, the news is created with about 80% of it is unhappy news. Mm-hmm. It's not happy news.
No.
It's unhappy news.
Yeah.
So today, yesterday, we recognize that happiness is a fundamental human goal. You know, and we call upon countries to approach public policies in ways that improve the well-being mm-hmm. of all people.
Right.
You know, and here's an interesting bit of information for listeners. I don't know whether people know this. Did you know that each year on March 20th, the sun, that's today, the sun is on the same plane as the Earth's equator.
Okay.
So that means the day and nights are all of equal length. And I believe that's why March 20th was chosen to remind us that there is a balance needed,
mm-hmm.
a balance needed in our lives.
Okay. How does the UN's idea of happiness sort of compare to your own idea?
Well, you know,
I didn't ask you what your idea of happiness really is before we go into the United Nations.
Well, I, you know, allow me to share a quick joke with you guys. The CEO was fed up with no one participating in meetings he organizes for his 500 over employees. So one bright manager suggested he call a psychologist who can hypnotize them to increase participation. The psychologist, let's call him Dr. B, mm-hmm. pulls out his watch and starts chanting, Watch the watch. Watch the watch. Watch the watch. The employees become mesmerized. And as the watch sways back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, suddenly, Dr. B's finger slipped and the watch accidentally falls to the floor. He curses loudly. Crap! Can you guess what happened?
No.
Let me just say, till today, that meeting hall smells quite bad. So, yes, I think, you know, nations seem to be functioning in a hypnotic state. That human development is measured by things like gross domestic product. And here comes a small country, Bhutan, in the Himalayas, that champions an alternative measure of national and societal prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it gross national happiness index that adopts a more holistic outlook.
Which is reflected in GDP.
It's not reflected in GDP, but it is reflected in GNH, Gross National Happiness Index.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where this Bhutan is saying that you need to balance, you need to include spiritual well-being as much as the material well-being of the person. So, the holistic well-being. And talk about one small step for the world and one big foot from the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they have done so well with the Gross National Happiness Index, Dr. Brandon?
I think, you know, if you look at it, and I don't really know whether you've had a chance. I know I have not had a chance to visit Bhutan yet. I've been to places like the United States, to America, to Canada, to Australia.
Who'd think of going to Bhutan, really?
All the high GDP countries.
Yeah.
But here's what I know of Bhutan. It's a small country. It's very poor. But their people are very happy. And it almost flies in the face of what we think and what the results show us. You know, can such a poor nation, can such a small nation be happy? How is this, you know, how did they discover this happiness? Now, Robert Kennedy once said, our nation's gross national product measures everything except what really matters. It measures everything except what really matters.
So how does the UN idea of happiness compare to your own? Or for an example, does the UN's idea of happiness, how does that compare to the one in Bhutan?
Well, let me ask our listeners here. Now, if you won $1 million today, would you be happy today?
Extremely.
Would you be happy tomorrow?
Maybe.
Would you be happy in 10 years? Would you be happy in 10 years' time?
$1 million not going to help you very much these days.
So if you take some time to ponder on this, you'll discover there's a difference between temporal happiness mm-hmm. and sustained happiness. You know, temporary happiness and sustained happiness. One is the immediate feel good. I have to have it now. I have to have it. It's the kind of, that gives me happiness and pleasure right now, you know. But the more sustained, genuine happiness is what I'm hoping we'll touch on today, you know. And sometime back, I had people mind map what happiness was to them in the workplace. Here are some responses. Happiness is, to go back early,
mm-hmm.
happiness is paradise. Happiness is cheerfulness. Happiness is playfulness. Happiness is prosperity, joy, you know, and on and on. As a psychologist, I've worked with children, I've worked with adults in the educational sector, in the corporate sector. You ask me how I see happiness? I see happiness as love, Mira. I see happiness as love. For the experience of happiness is in the worth of oneself and who and what's around us. So in many ways, spiritual models, you know, spiritual people have found this truthful for many moons ago.
Yeah.
For example, the core message of Jesus Christ was to love. You know, and many other religious leaders talk about it. I'm sure most of us have encountered people who have no self-love, who have no self-worth, who in their state, they question and doubt the worth of self, the worth of others, the worth of life. It's almost impossible to be happy. So it's quite timely. It's quite timely. You know, you ask, why now? Why now? It's quite timely to introduce the Gross National Happiness Index, where the spiritual well-being of citizens and communities is just as much important as the material well-being.
Yep.
And, you know, as the Dalai Lama says, happiness is not something ready-made. It comes from your own actions.
Exactly. And, you know, when you talk about self-worth, where are we lacking? Why do we have, why are we experiencing this lack of self-worth?
Well, it's a very complex question. It's a very loaded question because, you know, I think a lot of traditional psychologists have tried to understand this and tried to piece it out from Freud to Erikson to, you know. What's happening right now is, especially in the field of positive psychology, they've moved away from trying to find out what's wrong with human beings to what's going right with human beings, to what lends meaning and purpose to life, what cultivates the best of themselves, what enhances the experience of work, of love, of play. You know, it started with Martin Seligman, positive psychology, in 1999 in University of Pennsylvania, a university not too far away from where I did my PhD, in Penn State University. And it has three components, if you talk about positive psychology: positive emotions, positive individual traits, positive institutions. I've benefited a lot from positive psychology as I write my book on happiness psychology.
And sustained happiness is what you know, going to talk to us about. Mm-hmm. We'll find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasudhi. It's International Day of Happiness. Dr. Brandon Gomez, a consultant psychologist, is with me and we're discussing how you can probably attain sustained happiness. When you talk about sustained happiness, what do you mean, Dr.
Well,
Brandon?
Well, let me just...
sounds like hard work, really.
It is. Let me just first say what happiness is not. Happiness is not laughter. You can laugh all you want, but that doesn't make you happy. But laughter can be a sign of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is not joy, but joy can be a sign of happiness. Happiness is not the absence of suffering, as people who suffer are known to be happy. For example, the people in Bhutan are very poor, but they're very rich, rich in happiness. There's many rich people in Kuala Lumpur, in New York, you know, but they may not be very happy.
Mm-hmm.
C.S. Lewis states, "And out of that hopeless attempt has come nearly all that we call human history. Money, poverty, ambition, war, prostitution, glasses, empire, slavery, the long, terrible story of man trying to find something other than God which will make him happy." Now, someone wrote on my Facebook, "Happiness is smiles." And of course, I argued back because I see smiles as a sign of happiness, but happiness is more than smiles. You know, happiness is a state of being present to oneself, being present to others. Patricia and I were spending time at the police station last week. Somebody knocked into my car. In the midst of talking to this policeman, we somehow started talking about family life. And Sergeant Lila, that's his name, shared with us how he spends time with his family and how he'll play pranks or playfully tease his kids now and then. If you just happen to be on the wrong side of the law, I don't think you'll see his playfulness. But that sense of spontaneity and the ability to bring laughter to his family threw us by surprise. And we were impressed, you know, because at the crux of it all, our happiness lies in centeredness. That's the magic of happiness, that the center of all happiness lies in centeredness. This centeredness includes the notion of mindfulness, a perspective state of being aware of what is going on within us. And this requires, you said it right, Mira, it's hard work. It requires an investment of time and attentiveness to be able to reflect objectively on what we are thinking, what we are doing in the moment. It's this sense of mindfulness that helps guide our next course of attitude and our next course of actions. Because, you know, a lot of people think happiness is emotions. But our emotions are like the sea. They are the high tides, they are the low tides. Our emotions don't make us happy. Instead, our attitude of happiness is what helps create happy emotions. Mahatma Gandhi said this: "Happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony.
It's all about your attitude, really.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. which is something that's totally in your control.
Yeah.
As opposed to something like your emotions.
Yeah, but let me just say that happiness is not the absence of sadness. It's not the absence of sadness. I was a principal investigator of a large research study some years back called the Malaysian Child and Adolescent Wellbeing Study. We studied the psychosocial well-being and the psychosocial distress of teens. As we as expected, results showed that psychosocial well-being is not the opposite of psychosocial distress. In a similar manner, happiness is not the absence of sadness. Unfortunately, there is no on button that one can flip to become happy.
Yeah.
You know, to say to Mira, or to say to Sharon, you must be happy, does not turn her on to be happy, especially if Sharon is already depressed.
Yeah.
You know, in all reality, happiness is not a destination one reaches overnight, but a journey one embarks out of choice. And Miley Cyrus sings about it in The Climb. Mm-hmm. Ain't about how fast I get there, ain't about what's waiting on the other side, it's the climb. So everyone wants to live on top of the mountain, but all the happiness and growth occurs while we're climbing it. You know, it's the choice is about making a commitment to oneself that I'm going to start this journey to be happy. A journey that can be challenging for many people, because we know many people who are, you know, the challenging because of our conditioning to the fast life. Fast cars, fast coffee, fast food. Because of our past experiences of unhappiness that can drag us down, making us feel like failure, so we feel we can't start the journey. It's pointless. Mm-hmm. Challenging because of the hustle and bustle of our currently stressful life and hoping that we'll find some time in the future to start the journey. But such a future continues to be stressful, so we never start.
The future never comes, really.
Challenging because we feel we're unworthy to experience happiness.
Yep.
And engrave this on our mirrors, which we think reflect our unworthiness. Challenging because we may be surrounded by unhappiness at work, within our family circle, in our nation, in the programs we watch on TV. So we start to believe that this is the way life is and it can't be changed. Challenging because we feel happiness is only for a selected few. The rich and famous, one has to be a celebrity to enjoy happiness. Even though time and time again, we read about the sorrows of celebrities and how they end up either drugged, divorced, or dead. The choice towards making a commitment to start the journey to be happy is unfortunately riddled with as many roadblocks as you want to give yourself.
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
one mm-hmm. of the main problems, mm-hmm. isn't it? One of the stumbling blocks. Mm-hmm. Is happiness unattainable for some people?
Let me put this way. I know it may sound strange to listeners, but happiness is not a choice. Instead, starting our journey towards happiness is a choice. And I think it's attainable for everyone. Because I believe that we have full control over this choice to start that journey. We have a choice to decide if our roadblocks are going to hinder us from getting to our starting point or even impeding our progress on the road that we're traveling. Now, I love Viktor Frankl.
Mm-hmm.
Viktor Frankl talks about the meaning of life that is found in every moment of living. Life never ceases to have meaning, even in suffering and death. Now, he was a prisoner in a concentration camp in World War II, if people have read about Viktor Frankl, where thousands were enslaved, starved, or killed by the German army. Viktor Frankl says this, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Because everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the ability to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. Thus, I believe happiness is attainable and it is a set of choices we make to love ourselves and those around us amidst our circumstances.
Yep. Does it require a mental cleanup, or do we embark on that journey and deal with things as they, come along?
as a psychologist, I think it requires both. You know, it's about working on what you call a mental cleanup, but it's about committing to a journey and saying, look, you know, it's time to start. Bhutan said it's time, and look at what they've done. Mm-hmm. They've not only started in their country, they've got 192 other countries started on thinking about happiness. You know, that's the thing, we've just got to start.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the proclamation of this International Day will sort of encourage more debate and discussion of the pursuit of happiness?
I think it will. I think it will be a wonderful debate because there is so much out there we still do not understand about happiness, because there's so much variability between people, between countries, between nations. Each one is going to come up with their own index of happiness. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to find a lot of common grounds in terms of what we're talking about on happiness.
Mm-hmm. And all of this, do you think it translates or is it relevant to businesses, for example?
Oh, wonderful question, Mira. I think it's definitely relevant because it's important for us as a nation to understand that happiness is not merely an individual activity. It's a shared activity. And as a psychologist, we're trained to look at a person in his or her environment, meaning taking an ecological perspective. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, we need a new economic paradigm that recognizes the parity between three pillars of sustainable development: social, economical, and environmental well-being. Together, they define global happiness. So if the aim of International Day of Happiness is to move nations towards this new lens of thinking, we need to start looking at our social structures, our workplaces, our schools, our neighborhoods, our circles of associations. You know, there's a lot that organizations can do. You know, a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about nations, governments? Yeah. How can they play a role in all of this?
I mean, if you look at a nation, first and foremost, you have got to look at the lead. If you look at governments, for example, first and foremost, you've got to look at the leaders. You know, do they prioritize the well-being of their people? Is it on top of the agenda? You know, same as companies.
And what can some of these organizations do to sort of create more happiness?
There's a lot that organizations can do to create happy people and promote happiness in the workplace. But first, companies big and small need a roadmap. A roadmap in helping countries they operate in achieve a high gross national happiness index.
Shout out to whoever's listening.
Now, as a consultant,
in the right place.
I would be happy. I'd be happy to sit down with companies that envision a happy workplace that attracts talents, sustains productivity, and drives success, to work with them in drawing up a roadmap. Because we need to know that the magic of quality work life, no longer can we expect it to be based on wages alone. We need to understand what makes people tick. What is the psychology that makes teams work well? What bridges the divide between management and the workforce? What enables workers to give their best? Moving beyond the mechanistic treatment of employees as robots and recognizing the human form that they take, that people like you and me, that we have feelings, that we have families, that we have personal needs. For example, we seem to take pride when we compare figures of women's participation in the workforce. Mm-hmm. But as the need for dual income earners increases for families, what is happening to children left at home?
Yep.
Are economic planners looking into the changing face of the work environment? Do we see our responsibility in nurturing happy families, in nurturing happy communities? So we need to ask ourselves, what makes a country? The key social institutions are families, companies, communities. So when we address happiness of a country, we encompass happiness at the individual level, at the workplace level, at the national level. And, you know, that's how we start working towards a national index of happiness.
Which makes me wonder, why haven't we even looked at it in the past? Isn't it obvious?
Well, that would be an unhappy reflection. We should look at a future.
This is me, the pessimist. But I suppose, yeah, it is a great start. Do you even see, I mean, in terms of organizations, bottom line is always prioritized. How will this translate to bottom line?
I envision. I mean, this is, you know, this is sort of like the Martin Luther of happiness speech, I guess. You know, I dream for when we as business stakeholders can sit back and say we've successfully addressed work-life balance, when we can honestly say our teams are happy, when we can genuinely say that our CSR projects are not just smoke screens, but honestly engage and help our communities, that our mission statements include and are acted upon to contribute to the psychosocial well-being of our citizens. I think that's when we can celebrate and say, yes, we've helped create balance. We've helped create sustainability. And we've helped create a new global shift towards international happiness.
Mm-hmm. Sounds impossible in my mind.
I think, and I believe strongly, as many others in this field of psychology, that it is already started. It is not impossible.
Really? Where do you see it?
We've seen already Bhutan taking the first step. We've seen them influence 192 nations all across the globe to take the first step. Mm-hmm. We've seen an index come out to try to measure this. We've seen the first steps that have already been laid out in terms of focusing on how do we bring happiness back into humanity. And I think that I think the United Nations has started it. The question now is, how do we get others to jump on board? Mm-hmm. How do we get others to see the success that it can bring, the productivity that it can that we can enjoy out of it? How can we get them to see the fruits that can be brought in because of having happy people beside you, having happy people to walk with you, having happy people to work with you, having happy people to drive along the roadside with you, on the road with you, on the highways, yeah. You know, rather than everybody looking so stressed, you know, in all those traffic jams and looking like, if I could get out of my car, I'll murder you, you know. So, you know, wouldn't, I think it's not just a dream. I think we're slowly working towards it. We can achieve it. We need more people to jump on board.
But we need to start on a micro level.
Yes.
And that's you, us, individually.
And we are starting already. We are starting on BFM 89.9.
Wonderful. In summary, Dr. Brandon, how would you, take us forward with this whole idea of happiness and, of course, this International Day of Happiness?
First and foremost, you know, just to summarize, to realize that happiness is a set of choices. It's not a choice. It's a set of choices to be happy. It's not a attitude. It's a set of attitudes. It's something that we can teach people. It's something that we can provide in our training programs. It's something that we can encompass. Already people have started. If you look at the advertising industry, everybody is having happy products, happy meals, happy shampoos, happy baby napkins. You know, it's all about creating this sense of happiness. We can do anything and we can smile. But going back into what's true happiness, what sustained happiness in terms of a sense of self-worth, self-love, and purpose.
You're in the midst of writing a book on happiness psychology.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's because there's a lot of people grappling with this.
Do you think it will be all-encompassing? Because can you even put everything down in a book?
I think we have to start. You know, there's a number of books, to be honest, out there in happiness. I was just reading one fantastic book out there by Andrew Matthews.
I like that guy. I've had him on the show before.
He's a fantastic
Aussie guy.
He's a fantastic guy. I love his books. It's full of drawings and artwork.
Yep.
A brilliant guy, because he's able to take this notion of happiness and make it applied. So I want to encourage all your listeners out there. Now, I don't get a cut out of this, but I want to encourage all your listeners out there, if you go to the bookstore, you know, go to any of the bookstore, MPH or something, and look for his book, Andrew Matthews, on Happiness Now, mm-hmm. because a great applied book.
How's your book coming along?
It's coming along. It's going to take another probably 2 or 3 more months to complete, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm happy about the journey. Happiness is a journey.
That's the attitude. Thank you very much for joining me. Dr. Brandon Gomez, consultant psychologist, this International Day of Happiness on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.